Welcome to Nicosia Uncut, produced and presented by Andromache Sophocleous and Kemal Baykap.
In this episode, we discussed about a possible multi-party meeting on the issue of Cyprus.
We also discussed the new era in American politics, the re-election of Mr. Trump, and we analyzed it from the perspective of Turkish-American relations and Cyprus problem and regional developments. Welcome to Nicosia Uncut. Hello, Andromache.
Hello, Kemal.
Well, everybody is expecting us to talk about the Cyprus problem. There is not much change, I think, at the moment. The statements are coming from different circles, but mainly from Turkey, that they didn't change their position, that they keep saying that a federal target is not a target anymore, and any solution should be based on two separate states. So we have been discussing a lot whether it is a bargaining position or whether it's an indication that Turkey is not willing to get into negotiations at this stage, and they think that maybe it's better to park the Cyprus problem. Of course, we also in the past mentioned the fact that Cyprus, they like it or not, we like it or not, is part of the Turkish-Greek relations, negotiations and discussions. And of course, there are those suggestions that maybe Greece and Turkey would rather park Cyprus issue somewhere aside, and then they will continue working on their other affairs. So in this given context, Aristotelidis continues to say that they are trying their best to restart the negotiations. I haven't been hearing from Greece recently. A few months ago, they were very vocal, saying that they're interested to support the solution process. And of course, international community is very much distracted with the elections in the United States, USA, and the developments in Israel-Palestine, and not so much, I think, with Ukraine and Russia as much as it used to be in the early months and years. So how do you see the situation?
First of all, I would like to say that, because you said something about Greece, I think Greece is still the number one player that is pushing for things to move forward on the Cyprus problem. And I think they are doing it because, as we have explained many times in the past, they realize that in this course of rapprochement that they are taking with Turkey, Greece realizes that it will be in a precarious situation if they proceed with their rapprochement with Turkey while the Cyprus problem is unsolved. As we explained in the last podcast, Mitsotakis knows very well that anything that could upset the waters in Cyprus could impact everything that he's trying to do with the rapprochement between Greece and Turkey. And he knows very well that currently he might have managed very well to suppress the opposition to what he's doing. But if anything happens on the island that would kind of excuse all those who are against the rapprochement between Greece and Turkey, Mr. Mitsotakis knows very well that he will be in a precarious situation. So that's one. When it comes to Turkey, as you said, I think there is currently an acknowledgement that a conference will take place.
We will give a little bit of a background here, Andromache. There was a meeting in New York, and that was when the sides decided that they will hold a conference. So just to remind, I think our listeners know very well, but
After the meeting between the two leaders and the UN Secretary General, there was this reference to kind of a conference that would take place between the guarantor powers as well and the communities. So, of course, there we understand that the meeting that could take place would involve the Greek Cypriot and the Turkish Cypriot communities, the United Nations, Greece and Turkey for sure, and we are not sure about Britain. My understanding is that Britain will take part, but it could take part not at a high level, or at least not at the level at which the other guarantor powers will be.
So basically, there were different positions before that meeting in New York. And Turkey's side didn't want the all guarantors to be there. They just wanted Greece, Turkey, and Cypriot sides. And on the other hand, five-party was desired by Greek Cypriot leadership. So in a way, they're going to find a multi-level, a different kind of an arrangement where everybody will think that their position is satisfied.
Exactly. And I would like to make a mention here to Mr. Tatar's approach towards Britain's participation in this so-called meeting. And I think it's important to put it in perspective because it is important for our audience to understand why the Turkish Cypriot community has suddenly said that they don't want the UK to be part in this meeting. And my personal understanding or analysis behind this is that so the participation of the guarantor powers in a discussion on the Cyprus problem derives from the Treaty of Guarantee itself, which basically refers back to the Republic of Cyprus. So these three guarantors are guarantors thanks to the existence of the Republic of Cyprus. So what the Turkish Cypriot side is basically trying to do currently, and it falls in line with their general approach and strategy, is that they are trying to shift this away from an issue that brings from a problem between the two communities that were the founding parts of the Republic of Cyprus to an issue that is an issue of two different communities, two different peoples, which is very important to highlight this. Each community has their own motherland, let's say. I mean, this is the perspective of Mr. Tatar, and this motherland needs to be represented in this meeting. So the attempt by the Turkish Cypriot side to kind of sideline Britain in this falls in line with this understanding.
It's a clear break from the existing tradition of the whole history of Cyprus problem, the whole understanding United Nations. So it's clearly a break from his perspective. From everybody's perspective, of course, if this happens to be the case. But it's not going to take place, I guess. It's going to be some sort of... UK will be there, maybe, but not as a primary player.
Yes, that's my understanding as well. And in general, I think in this meeting, I think you put it very well. I think there is an attempt currently to leave the setting a bit open. There is no reference to bizonal bicommunal federation. I would urge our listeners to appreciate that at this stage, what should be a matter of concern for the people that are interested in the reunification of Cyprus should be the single state, single sovereignty, single international personality, single citizenship. So I think this is what we need to be aiming at if we are interested in basically following the framework that has brought us up to here, but without being very exhaustive, I would say, on
terminology, basically.
On terminology,
you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. We were discussing the possibility that they might come up with some kind of a deal, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, maybe after the elections, maybe next year, who knows, that it will look like a federation, it will sound and taste like a federation, but it will not be named federation. Maybe it will be called a power-sharing mechanism, whatever. And then from everybody's perspective, people will be minimally happy or satisfied. But again, even for this, Andromache, I think Turkey is waiting for, number one, the Turkish Cypriot elections, which will take place in October 2025, where Mr. Tatar will probably be running again. We don't have any information or any indication that will be otherwise. And I think also because now that we have the new American administration and Turkey is trying to rearrange its power sharing relationships in the region, firstly, I think there is still a disagreement about what role Turkey will play in Syria, especially in northern Syria, because there is a Kurdish element there which is being supported by the United States, and Turks think that if this will be materialized in a way that eventually their territories, which is neighboring to that area, which is habited by the Kurdish people, will eventually be creating maybe an issue, even in the long run, some sort of a challenge to the authority of Turkey in that area. So Turkey feels very much at the moment that they need to handle this, and I think they're very much occupied with this. And also, Andromache, maybe our listeners didn't know, but maybe some paid attention. Recently, ultra-right wing, nationalist, they are known as the Grey Wolves Party, the nationalist movement's party leader and the coalition partner of Mr. Erdogan, suddenly shifted 180% different direction and made a call to the present Kurdish leader, Abdullah Öcalan, and asked him, why don't you come to the parliament and, be represented there. Of course, this is a very taboo thing for the Turks, considering that for many, many years, for many decades, they have been fighting a war against the Kurdish insurgents. I think Turkey is very much occupied with these kind of developments at the moment. And I think they just want to park Cyprus problem until that they see a real prospect. I don't think that they see a prospect at the moment.
Well, we also need to be kind of pragmatic in our discussion of this in saying that Turkey has absolutely no incentive, like currently, to push things forward for the Cyprus problem. It is ameliorating its relations with Greece. It seems to be putting its relations with the European Union on track. It has de facto control of the north. It is enhancing its control in the north. The grip is becoming increasingly asphyxiating. The new Turkish ambassador to the north is a person that seems to have his claws everywhere. So Turkey is enhancing its grip in the north. Nobody's saying anything about it. At the same time, it appears to be interested in discussing. They're going to proceed to this meeting. But the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Hakan Fidan, even in an interview ahead of his visit to Greece for a meeting with his Greek counterpart, in that interview he had openly said that the chapter of reunification has closed and that the meeting will only be for them to discuss what will happen in the future. Having said that, I don't want to give the impression that I feel like everything is lost or that Turkey will not move. What I am saying is that, pragmatically speaking, I do not see what has changed for Turkey to have found an incentive or an interest in moving. And that's what we had been saying last time as well. The Greek Cypriot leadership, it is very good in rhetoric. It says it wants to, but you are the side that is occupied. You are the side that has certain demands. You are the side that needs to be in a position to think of ideas of outside the box if you want to create a setting in which you move things. And I think I'm going to let you comment here, and I think it's worth touching a bit on the new US administration and what we perceive about its impact on Cyprus and the Cyprus problem and Trump's relations to Erdogan.
The most difficult American-Turkish relations era was when Trump was in power, at the time when they were trying to, I think, understand each other's legacy and their positions. And everybody remembers how Trump was sending a very undiplomatic letter to Mr. Erdogan at the time. Don't be a fool, don't be a tough guy, as if you're in a Midwest or whatever, in a bar, and then you're about to fight your opponent. But interestingly enough, after the re-election of Mr. Trump, the Turkish pro-Erdogan circles have been very happy because, number one, they really hated Mr. Biden. They thought that he was pro-Greek, pro-Hellenic. And two, the relationship between the U.S. and Turkey was not easy under Biden either. So, number three, they're thinking that Mr. Trump will not pay attention to the human rights records of Turkey, will not pay attention if Turkey is having issues internally or prisoning the journalist, or democracy will not be a criteria. So they think that these two authoritarian leaders will finally find a tune to get along well. And I think it is a possibility that Mr. Erdogan and Mr. Trump might actually get along better than Mr. Erdogan and Mr. Biden. Having said that, however, I think it will be too naive to think that Americans will easily shift policies. I think that despite the fact that Mr. Trump is deteriorating the American institutions, still there are strong institutions and their policy will not change in a single day. I think Americans are aware of the fact that, number one, Cyprus is becoming very close to them under Christodoulidis. And number two, I think they also realize that Turkey will need to be controlled in the area. They are not going to give up on Turkey. Having said that, they are not going to be fixing their relations back to the years of Cold War. So this is the picture. And I think Mr. Trump administration will be busy with other things. They will try to find some sort of a maybe unfair solution in the area, in Palestine, in Israel. Maybe they will try to pressure sides in Ukraine. I don't think that they're going to stop supporting Ukraine in a single day. I think they might be trying to use diplomatic means to pressure them for some sort of a deal. But at the end of the day, I think Cyprus is not necessarily an item in their agenda as a separate item. It might be, it can be, if there will be an issue, an arrangement based on energy, regional security, and then maybe that might be coming into the picture.
Yeah, I mostly agree with what you say. I'm just going to add a few points here. On the one hand, I think it's worth mentioning that this amelioration of relations between the Republic of Cyprus and the US that has been coming for a while, in fact, kind of started around the era of Mr. Trump. So we need to put this in the picture. That was a strategic shift by the US that I don't think that it's going to be in any way lifted. As you said, I believe that this will continue. At the same time, I think it is worth saying a few things about Trump. I honestly believe that we should all be alarmed by what is happening in the US, especially after having seen the appointments that Mr. Trump has already announced in a number of key positions. Mr. Trump seems to be choosing the most radical of his supporters. And as you said, Trump is a person that seems to be very impressed by strong leaders. That's what marks his relationship with Putin. He has made very similar statements, like positive statements about the leader of China. And, you know, he doesn't care about democracy, evidently. He cares about what seems to be this strong machismo, enforcing policy, etc. And I think, if we take a step back, I think that regardless of his relationship to Erdogan and the troubles that we had seen back in his previous term, I believe that at the end of the day, a man so transactional as Trump could be admiring Mr. Erdogan for his whole approach and for this machismo that he's also putting forward. But at the same time, I honestly think that they can both find a way of do business together. I can see that. And we need to put this in the context of strong leaders that Trump seems to be appreciating. So that's one. At the same time, I think it is important to understand that Mr. Trump doesn't seem to be in any way particularly concerned about international law. Some of his statements, for instance, regarding Russia and Ukraine, I don't think he minds if Russia takes a part of Ukraine and for that to bring the end. So, I mean, he has been putting forward some notions around this that, along with the idea that he has announced appointments by people that are very much against the UN resolutions when it comes to Israel and Palestine. He has appointed people that are openly in favor of Israel annexing the West Bank, which completely contravenes the UN resolutions on the issue. So we need to put this in the picture. If we see such an unprecedented I would like to put a parenthesis here. We have seen a complete obliteration of international law over the past year. By the way, Israel is acting after the horrible attack by Hamas. But I believe that this would go to a next step if the US sides with Israel in completely disregarding the UN resolution and going forward with the annexation of the West Bank. In this case, I believe that Cypriots should be concerned because it paves the way for a sorting of differences or of long-standing disputes in a way that contravenes international law and in a way that contravenes the UN resolutions. And all this in a setting in which the United Nations, the UN Security Council are in an unprecedented way weakened. So we need to put all of this in the picture in order to appreciate that things are difficult at the moment. And I would add here the general distance of the US from the Cyprus problem that we have noted multiple times in this podcast in the past. In the past few years, they don't seem to be in any way pushing for it or concerned about it. Obviously, when Mr. Christodoulidis went to the White House, there was a reference by the White House and Mr. Biden to a bizonal bicommunal federation with political equality. But aside from this, we haven't seen any major push from the US lately.
I mean, if the name of the game is might make rights, it's not going to be to the advantage of the people, the weak powers. as simple as that, you know. Might make rights means the bigger powers will do whatever they want, so nobody will force any big power to give up on their positions. So, and you rightly mentioned that the Americans are also a member of the Security Council and the permanent members. So if there is such a disregard to international law and international organizations, and then how anybody will be claiming that, Cyprus should be going back, the entire island should be part of the international law and an international order. In these difficult times, I think it's very important for Republic of Cyprus to try to build as much bridges as possible to keep the connections alive, to make sure that the Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots are connected to each other irreversibly, having business relationships, having family relationships, having connections with Republic of Cyprus, with their documentations, with, being acting as citizens. And then, in fact, we have been talking about these things, not because we thought that it is the right thing to do, but it's also a strategic thing to do for the Greek Cypriots and especially for the Greek Cypriot leadership. We don't see it happening. We've discussed this many times. There were so many promises by Christodoulidis that there will be measures, there will be confidence-building steps, there will be new openings towards the Turkish Cypriots, and these are not happening. With your other hat as a member of the World Party, you have visited Mr. Christodoulidis. How do you see his position on that? How do you see, what does he expect, one, on the Cyprus problem, and two, bicommunal relations?
We did visit Mr. Christodoulidis in a meeting with Volt. Of course, Mr. Christodoulidis was speaking to a pro-solution bicommunal party. Okay, so let's put that in the picture. I cannot say that he said something with which we disagreed. I cannot say that he presented himself to us as someone who is hesitant in the face of what is going to happen. He was very open. I think he was frank when he was briefing us about the behind-the-scenes developments. I believe he sees that a meeting will take place. Having said that, but that is my personal position as to what I got out of it. My criticism towards the Greek Cypriot side remains. I do not think that the Greek Cypriot side fully understands where we are at. I believe that, yes, they seem committed. Yes, they want to push for this. Yes, they fully understand the stagnation of time, etc. But I still have not seen in them an attempt to kind of think outside the box in how they approach the situation. That's what is missing. To be honest, our meeting, it didn't change my mind as to that. Maybe they don't even have the influences, Maybe they don't even have the instigations. I don't know, but I don't think that they are in a position to take those decisive steps that could be needed in order for them to kind of change the course of things.
We have been hearing news about the declining popularity of Mr. Christodoulidis, mainly because he is not delivering on his promises, not only in the Cyprus problem, but also in other areas. He keeps cancelling big projects and plans, and then there are, of course, surveys on the newspapers, on media, that his popularity is declining. Is it really the case, or is it just the Nicosian elite thinks that this is the case?
I think there is indeed a lot of talk about his declining popularity. Many people were saying that his rates are even lower than those of Mr. Christofias after the Marie explosion. I told you before, Kemal, privately, I take a step back from this analysis. I believe that this is to a great extent exaggerated. I believe that there is an attempt by certain media to kind of blame Christodoulidis for everything. Don't get me wrong, I am a very critical voice, but I don't think that it's the end of the world. I have been hearing a lot about the way he gets received by people wherever he goes. And knowing the psyche of the Greek Cypriot, I think slowly his rates will be becoming better. I said before that I believe that the meeting in the White House did boost his popularity because Greek Cypriots like to see these developments. You remember a while ago we saw a picture of Mr. Christodoulidis with Mr. Erdogan and Hakan Fidan around the same table and Mr. Mitsotakis. It was at an international conference. These things work for the Greek Cypriots. Sometimes more than substance does. So I'm not going to share the belief of those who think that he it's a dead case. I don't agree with that. Having said that, I need to put in the picture a number of developments. On the one hand is we had the first open and direct attack by Mr. Anastasiadis against Mr. Christodoulidis. So let me give you a bit of a background. Mr. Anastasiadis lately appears to be very disappointed in what he believes is his political son because he expresses that he has been ungrateful. Mr. Anastasiadis, he had mentioned it in an interview a while ago as well, but a few days ago he did an interview with Mr. Tsouroulis from Sigma TV. It was a podcast interview, and in that he openly said that he feels that Mr. Christodoulidis is taking credit for things that his government did, and on the contrary, he doesn't give the credit to his predecessor. He said that they don't speak on the phone as much as they did. So to put this into context, I think we need to understand that Mr. Anastasiadis is a person who expected Mr. Christodoulidis to be completely defending his predecessor and to be completely defending the Anastasiadis government and term. What Christodoulidis has done is that he has chosen neither to embrace it nor to kind of dismiss it. Mr. Christodoulidis wants to be portrayed as a DC supporter. He's a DC member, but he doesn't want to take all the stigma from the Anastasiadis government. This evidently is something that Anastasiadis might not have expected, and now he's disappointed. And just to add to this, it appears, or political rumor has it, that Mr. Christodoulidis is currently in a sort of understanding with Mrs. Anita Dimitriou that DC will reduce its opposition towards Mr. Christodoulidis. I think that both Anita Dimitriou and Nikos Christodoulidis, because they are kind of in the target of former DC leader Averof Neofitou, I believe that they are both now trying to find a way to get out of the situation. And it kind of suits them both at the moment to kind of come to a truce. And we have seen a lot of developments in that front.
Well, in the lack of the Cyprus problem, of course, other developments and other issues are always on the agenda. And in the Turkish Cypriot community, we are actually seeing the disintegration of politics, if I may. That's how I defined this situation. And I think after Turkey's intervention in the elections, when Mr. Akıncı lost and Mr. Tatar won the elections with a small margin, then Turkey started to develop this habit of interfering even in the micropolitics of the Turkish Cypriots, such as the leading right-wing UBP party, pro-Turkish, pro-TRNC, were about to choose a leader, and Turkey interfered. I don't know if you recall, we had a podcast on this some time ago, and now that they interfered again in the party assemblies, and now the leading UBP party is very much disintegrated. Why is it so important? It's important because Turkish Cypriot politics is a parliamentary system. And currently there is a three-party coalition led by the right-wing UBP party. And the current coalition controls 29 seats out of 50-seated parliament, which means that they could easily choose a speaker of the parliament, and they couldn't. They couldn't, despite the fact that coalition partners have committed to voted and for the UBP candidate, and they did. It seems that within UBP, the intra-party politics, which is so disintegrated now, backstabbed each other's and the current UBP leader and the current Turkish Cypriot Prime Minister. And what happened that eventually after rounds and rounds and rounds of attempts, they couldn't select parliament speaker, which means that the parliament will not be able to start functioning properly. And of course, finally, they have agreed on a candidate. And after several rounds, this candidate, which is now being recognized by the right wing as the legitimate speaker of the Turkish Cypriot Parliament, was elected right enough votes, with three of the votes were actually have multiple stamps on them, which actually, you know, the common logic tells you that these votes should have been cancelled. And they said, no, there is nowhere in the statutory which says that they should be cancelled. And this created another crisis, of course. Opposition started not boycotting, but actively participating and blocking and creating disturbances and not letting the sessions to open. So actual fight every morning, they are going, who's going to start, you know, catch the seat, who's going to sit there first, like a musical chair. So it's really this disintegration of the Turkish Cypriot politics. And of course, the opposition leader recently said that, look, let's agree on a name from your party. We're going to support you as long as you give up on this person who you claim that elected, but because the votes were not proper, we consider him unelected. And right, you know, this is taking place at the time of the celebrations of the unilateral declaration of independence of TRNC in the north. And the Turkish officials came, the speaker, the so-called speaker of the parliament is attending, giving, you know, invitations. So it's a very strange situation. Apparently, there is somebody behind the scenes, probably the ambassador, probably Turkey, keeps telling them, go on, move on, you know, it's finished, he's elected, it's gone. But I think UBP also knows very well that this is not the right thing to do, because when you have multiple stamps on the same ballot paper, it means that it's cancelled. It's as simple as that. So this is the situation, this latest crisis in the Turkish Cypriot politics. I think Tufan Erhürman, the leader of the left-wing CHP party, the main opposition party, made this opening, and then we'll try to convince the UBP, because I think UBP is also really fed up with this. I think they want to move on. They want to continue their work. And maybe in the second half of November, we might be seeing some developments in that as well. How will this affect the upcoming elections in October? I think it's in 2025. I think it's too early to say. We have been hearing stories, of course, that Turkey likes Tufan Erhürman, but I think this was the time when Mr. Akıncı was in power. They were preferring Tufan Erhürman instead of Mustafa Akıncı as the preferable left leader. But now that they have Tatar, who has fully compliant with the Turkish politics, but also accepts any kind of instruction coming from Ankara, they don't want a leader who tells that he still believes in a federal solution. So we don't know how this is going to be shaped. We know that in the past, Turkey has tried a few times to elect someone and it backfired. But we don't know how demographics have changed since then, and we don't know whether this will not be an obstacle for the Turkish Cypriot opposition. It is still early to say, but the Turkish Cypriot politics, I think, is really disintegrated at the moment.
Thank you for this. I think a lot of people are asking about this and they're wondering about this. Okay, we said we would keep it brief. I think we're good.
I think before we finalize, a reminder, you and I were in this documentary called The Divided Island, produced by two Cypriots living in the UK, a Greek Cypriot and a Turkish Cypriot. And then this documentary is now being premiered in the UK, and they also showed it here in Cyprus. And our faces are all over the place, Andromai. I have been seeing screenshots from this documentary. So maybe in the coming episodes, we might be inviting them and explain so that they tell us about this documentary, about the divided island, which is Cyprus. And I've seen it. I think it's very strong. It's very powerful. And the first part is particularly dealing with the history of Cyprus problem. And you and I know very well dealing with the Cyprus history is very difficult to try to put an objective narrative. If you ask me, they did a good job on that. And in the second part, they talk about the current attempts, you know, to bring the communities together. And then they also hosted you and me in this documentary. And then they are also trying to agree with Netflix to show it all around the world. So we'll see how it goes. And the second thing I wanted to tell that we are also trying to contact some Turkish academicians to have a better understanding of their position from their perspective, the Turkish Greek relations and Cyprus problem, Turkey's role in the region, Turkish-American relations. Maybe in the upcoming podcast we'll be doing that. But also, we are also planning to have another episode. Maybe you want to say a little bit about that too.
Yes, in a few days we will record an episode with Fezile and Nasia, two researchers that are working on an EU-funded project, the Inclusive Peace Building, the Technical Committees in Cyprus, that is evaluating the work of these technical committees. I have been on the steering committee of this project for a while, and it would be worthwhile, I think, to share their insights, share their conclusions, and share what they have found out through the course of this project. So we will very soon record an episode with them as well.
Good. We have so many things on our plate, and let's roll.
Exactly.
All right, then. Talk to you later. Thank you very much for listening.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.